Welcome to the Marketing Phoenix Podcast, where my guest and I will give you our best growth strategies for marketing that leads to sales. My name is Melissa Rogozinski, and I'll be your host. Today, I am delighted to have my friends and colleagues, Martha McPherson and Cheryl Wilson-Griffin, as our guests on our show today. So welcome, ladies. Excited to have you here.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks. We're excited to be here, too.
So ladies, if you don't mind, take 60 seconds and tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your background and your current role. Let's start with Martha, if that's okay. And then Cheryl, we'll punt to you. Martha?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much. So I've been in marketing for 25 years. I spent half of my career in sales and the other half in marketing, which has definitely made me a better marketer. I am currently working for a legal tech startup called eDiscovery Assistant as a chief marketing officer. Really happy to be there and happy to be working with Kelly Twigger, who hopefully everybody knows. She's definitely an expert in the industry and just a wonderful person. I have been working in the legal tech space for about 13 years. I started with D4 when they were a really small company and helped grow them to the point where we were acquired by Special Counsel, and then they were acquired by Consilio, and then a few other companies until I got here at eDiscovery Assistant. So I'm really happy to be here, and thanks for doing this, Melissa.
Absolutely. Cheryl?
Excellent. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so Cheryl Wilson-Griffin, I am the CEO and the principal consultant at Legal Tech Consultants, a company that started in 2000 and is focused on bringing together legal tech and process, basically. I have 20 years in the industry. Maybe it's more, but I'm rounding down to 20 now because I'm not trying to appear older than I currently am. And really focused on both buying and selling. So I've been on the big law side through Kirkland and Mayer Brown and King and Spalding, and then have been on the startup side through a couple of different startups, several of which have been acquired, although none by Consilio, LexisNexis, or Thomson Reuters. I don't know how that's possible yet. But right now, where I'm focused is working with startups and small and mid-sized law firms to either work tech into their practice or to align their strategies to the real world of legal. And I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Rogo.
Absolutely. And I've met both of you in the last couple of years because of technology and the pandemic and the remote work from home. So ladies and gentlemen, the reason we're having this conversation is because we want to touch on, there seems to be some questions about four components and pillars, very critical, important pillars of what marketing is and what it isn't. So we're going to talk about marketing from the point of what is brand awareness, demand generation, lead generation and or conversion, and analytics reporting. So each one is for, especially with all three of us working for startups, you know, each one is very important. You really have to have brand awareness first. You cannot do the others until you have brand awareness. Nobody knows who you are. They're not going to trust you, or they're not going to buy from you if they don't know who you are. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole just yet. And that's really what brought us together, is because there were some questions and conversations and misunderstandings that I think all three of us were seeing from, the startup world in general. And then I posted something actually from a competitor, and Cheryl and Martha both jumped on. We had a conversation on LinkedIn about it. And I was like, hey, why don't we write this article together and let's do a video interview? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. So it's, girl power in legal marketing. So with that, we will be posting the article. The link will be in the podcast, but we really just want to have a fun conversation about this. So Cheryl, let's start with you and let's talk about what is brand awareness and why is it so important?
Yeah, absolutely. So in its simplest form, brand awareness is really that idea that people know who you are. They know your company, they know your product, they know your name. They recognize when they hear the name, they know what you do, right? And if you think about it, I mean, that really is the most basic form of existence, right? People can't buy something that they don't know exists. They can't come to your website if they don't know where to look for you. And so if you haven't established brand awareness, going back to what you said, Melissa, That's step one. You can't have step two without step one. And so until you've got to that point, you really can't do that. And so when you think about brand awareness, you're talking about reputation, you're talking about trust, you're talking about thought leadership as well, right? Do people not only trust you, but do they believe that you can bring that special secret sauce? You know, is your product got that thing in it that does something that no one else's does? Why should they buy you versus someone else's? And so it's really about establishing yourself in the market as a company that can do something that no one else can do.
You know, and I think that's something that you and I both have done, because we both have struck out on our own. People know me from the pink hair and the story add, you know, the personal and professional story, the whole rising from the ashes multiple times because of the personal, you know, health challenges a few years ago. And then everybody knows me as Rogo. There are very few people in this industry that know my first name is actually Melissa. And it catches me off guard when I hear it. But two, you have established your brand as well, like with the color palette you're using for your company and your big glasses, like, and the way that you take pictures and the way that you pose for pictures, like those are, and I want to hear from you, but for me, being your friend and colleague on the outside looking in, those are the three things that when I think of Cheryl Wilson Griffin, I'm thinking about your aqua color palette, I'm thinking about your glasses, and I'm thinking about the way that you pose in like your pictures when you're at events and with friends and colleagues. So that's all brand, and that's driving brand awareness. And so you and I are very identifiable and recognizable through that. You want to add anything to that?
No, I think you're right. And I think too, if you read any of my writing, there's a very clear tone in it that sets me apart. Even ChatGPT thinks so. It can find my tone and write in it at this point. So I think those are all really important things to establish. And what, you know, where I think it really comes out, and here's a solid example at ILTACON, there were people that came up to me and said, oh, I know you from online. I love what you're doing, you know, and that's establishing brand awareness. And that's the first step to getting somebody to buy from you.
So we kind of touched on it, but go ahead and jump into it. So can you give our audience just a list of activities specifically that are geared to driving brand awareness?
Yeah, there's all sorts of fun stuff. And let me just check my notes so I don't miss anything. Okay. Yeah, thought leadership. So writing articles, case studies, writing in magazines, speaking engagements. So right, speaking at ILTACON, right? Legal Week. All those things are really great ways to get people to believe in what you're doing. Having great interviews with folks like Stephanie Wilkins and the great folks over at Legal Tech News. Social media. Do not sleep on social media. I tried to do that for a decade. Apparently we're really doing it. Go learn about it. Go do it. Those are all great ways to get the word out about yourself.
Great. And then before we move on to the next, with demand generation. So what is your best advice for legal businesses to truly understand brand awareness and where it fits in their overall strategy?
Yeah. I mean, I think the key thing that I like to tell anyone I'm working with is you have to know where your audience goes for trusted information, right? If you are working with mid-sized law firms, you know, you probably don't want to go to TechCrunch and start writing articles. They're probably not reading there for their information, right? So find out, where are they going? Which newsletters are they reading? Which publications are they reading? And that's the place where you want to be. Which events are they going to? Are they going to ABA events? Are they going to IBA events? You know, what types of things? Those are the places you want to be. Those are the places you want to put your content. And make sure that if you put your content behind a paywall, for God's sakes, make sure it's somewhere that they're paying for. make sure that's a place where they're a subscriber.
And you brought up conferences. That's another really important, like, you know, we're at Legal Tech, we're at ILTA, you know, we're at some of these bigger conferences, like your audience may not be there. And when I lived in Alabama, there were six people on the list who went to Legal Tech from Alabama, right? They're not there. They're at local events, local bars, state bar associations. So you're exactly right. Like, it's not about you, it's about them. Where are they? And if you're not there, they can't find you.
Right.
So, Martha, demand gen, let's talk about this. So I think one of the big questions I really want to ask and hear from you is what is demand generation and lead generation, and what are the differences?
Sure. Well, you know, as we all know, that demand generation and lead generation, they both play a crucial role in the growth of the company and revenue growth. I think that they are one of the most important functions of a marketing team. And while they're interrelated, demand and lead generation serve really distinct roles in the customer acquisition process. Demand generation encompasses broader marketing activities aimed at driving awareness. So it kind of falls into the brand awareness category as well, and interest in your products or services. And then lead generation is explicitly focused on capturing and collecting the information of these high quality contacts. So getting them to give you their email address, their name, their company, and their title, so that those can then be directly passed on to the sales team for further engagement and hopefully conversion.
So let's talk about the kinds of activities that each encompasses, because, and I've actually got a follow-up question that's, you know, on that I'm going to piggyback on this, but mm-hmm. So for demand generation, we're piggyback on brand awareness. You have to have brand awareness first, right? So demand generation, and what are the activities that goes along with demand generation? And then how are you actually going to get them to give you their information for lead generation?
Right, sure. So for demand generation, what I focus on for most of my career are things like, you know, blogs. You know, have a really good blog and make sure it's consistent. So just setting up a blog and having one every month or 4 weeks, you know, or 4 months, whatever it may be, you just want to keep it consistent and get people to subscribe to it. So blogs, podcasts, videos like this video, and your podcast. I think PR also falls into this, PR and media relations, SEO and paid advertising. Anything that caters to the pain points of the audience kind of fall into this category. All really strategically designed to nurture the buyer's relationships over time and establish that thought leadership.
So I want to touch a little bit on lead generation, because we know now, because of technology and because of the pandemic and how it forced an evolution, right? Buyers and clients and prospects are taking themselves much further on their own journey before they ever reach out. You know, we're seeing statistics of at least 70% up to 80%. Like, they are getting themselves almost all the way to your door. And by the time mm-hmm. they contact you, they know what they want. They know what their budget is. They're really just kind of fine tuning and want your help on how to make that decision one way or another. And one of the things that I saw was, and it's something that I posted, is kind of what started this conversation, is putting, being very careful about what you're putting behind, what's the word I'm looking for, Martha? The lead generation, like
capture. Gated.
Gated.
Yeah. Gated,
yeah. Yep. Gated content. And I saw this 4 years ago when I started RPC. I knew that paid advertising was going to have a problem. And I remember telling people, if you don't learn how to do organic marketing and really understand the buyer's journey, and, you know that, especially in B2B, this takes time. If you're relying on paid, you're going to have a problem in a few years, not only because of the data privacy laws and all the trouble that Facebook and Google were getting into, and all the, you know, millions and billions of dollars that they have been fined by governments all over the world, right, for misappropriation of the data they're collecting. But now we're seeing our marketing colleagues also are saying, be very careful about that gated content. So, Martha, can you talk a little bit about that to our audience?
Sure. The especially this has become quite a trend over the last year or two, especially with the pandemic and everyone, you know, no in-person meetings, is that gated content is something that has to be incredibly valuable to your contact or to your lead and prospect. You know, I no longer want to give up my email address, especially my business email address, unless it's something that's incredibly valuable to me as a marketer. So, you know, I think we're seeing a trend where ebooks and shorter white papers and infographics are no longer gated. You want to gain the trust of the lead, of the contact, you know, before they have to give over their information, before they, as I like to say, reveal themselves to you. So You know, just recently we released a 60-page guide. I called it an ebook, but it's really not an ebook. It's 60 pages. And that is definitely something that should be gated. That is incredible, valuable information. And people are willing to give up their contact information for that. So I think that you just have to really decide how the information, how important it is to your prospect and what value it gives to them before you decide to gate it. And it's definitely, like I said, definitely a trend where things are becoming less gated, if you will, and giving away, quote unquote, giving away more thought leadership content. That's definitely the trend. And I think it's going to continue.
You know, and we're going to punt to Cheryl here in just a second too, but value, you brought up that word, and that's really, and that's something I'm reading about too. Like, because if you gate something and once they give you their information and download it and it doesn't offer them the value that it promised to, you lose.
Yeah.
It's ice. You're done. Right. And not only are you done with them, but if they talk to others, like, that's a real problem. Don't set up gated content just to get the information. You have to give them something of value, because if you don't, it's going to backfire on you. Cheryl, jump in.
And yeah, you're going to lose their trust too. Sorry. You'll lose their trust as well.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So, and when you think about what you're gating, right? So I think value is exactly one of the questions he asked. The other question is purpose, right? Like, what are you trying to do with it, right? So is the goal to collect names? Are you trying to generate leads? Or are you actually doing it for brand awareness, right? So I just released the definitive guide to legal tech startups, 40 pages, 44 startups, a bunch of great thought leadership content. And so I did a little experiment. I really produced that for brand awareness, but I put it gated, specifically actually for this interview, because I wanted to see what would happen. 49% of the people who came to the page did not proceed through the gate. I've since removed the gate.
That's an interesting
statistic.
Yeah, but but even for that much content, and we had, you know, it's great writers. We've had plenty of previews in it, and I've gotten great feedback on it. That much drop off. And so really, I think about the purpose of it. What are you trying to do? Do you really need and want those names? And if what you're trying to do is increase brand awareness and it's not really lead gen, don't gate it.
I like what you said. Do you really need the names? Cheryl, that's so smart. You're right. Because, like, especially with startups, like, do you really need the names? And what names are you trying to collect and why? Okay. Right. Because if you, and this is a whole other conversation, but if you don't know who your target buyer is, your ideal client, it's called ICP or buyer persona, your ideal client persona, your buyer persona. Like, you need to put some work into understanding who your ideal client personas are first before you can create content. You can't just create things for the sake of collecting names and because you need them. But then the other flip side too is, like, the three of us are seasoned veterans in this industry. And, you know, each one of us, I've worked my butt off networking organically. I'm originally from Alabama. And when I started the round table, you know, 11, 12 years ago, you know, we did it in Alabama for a couple of years, but when I knew it was going to become a business, my first thought was, I made a list of all the vendors at the time that I wanted to sponsor programs. And I thought, how am I going to get these people to notice me? I'm just from small town Alabama. So I went to Legal Week, or it was Legal Tech at the time. And I had, like a bootstrap, nothing budget. And I came up with these, I came up with a flyer on my own, which now we've progressed way past that. and I came up with these blinking necklaces. They were these just blue, it was the color of my logo. And it said, hashtag where's eCert, and it had the website on it. And so I went to Legal Week with my blinking necklaces and my brochure, and I just hustled. And I went through for 3 days to meet everybody I could. And the first day it was kind of a fail. I couldn't get anybody to talk to me. But at the happy hours that night, all of a sudden everybody wanted blinky necklaces because it was dark, and it took off. And then that hashtag where is eCert eventually became hashtag where's Rogo. And y'all see me go around at Legal Week, and I do pictures with vendors and stuff. And Cheryl, I've seen you do it too. And, you know, and I had Nancy Marilyn. She's like, oh, I'm going to borrow the hashtag where's Rogo. I'm going to do hashtag where's Nancy, you know? So it's fun and it's cool, but, like, back to, do you need the names? Do you need gated content? Why are you doing it? Get out there and meet people. Brand yourself. get up. You have, if you're, especially as a startup,
right?
You're just going to have to hustle and have a plan.
Right.
So anyway, I hope I didn't go too far down that rabbit hole.
Do you have any more of those blinking necklaces?
I know.
I'm stashed in a pocket somewhere. But yeah, maybe next time with the Phoenix, we'll have one that blinks like five different colors, right?
There you go.
So, okay, before I move on, anything else we want to talk about? The difference between demand generation and lead generation? Loving the conversation on gated content and lead generation. And you can't just rely on that. You've got to hustle and just put yourself out there and go meet people and talk to them. And you've got to have intelligent things to talk about. You've got to understand what their goals are, what their pain points are in order to have that conversation. So let me stop there and ask, ladies, jump right in. Anything you want to add to that?
I think that, and I don't know if we're going to jump into this later, but I think, or I know that one of the most important factors in all this is sales and marketing alignment. You have to make sure that the marketing and sales team are fully aligned. So, you know, the sales team trusts those leads when you pass them over. They trust that they are qualified and they're not going to waste their time, because we all know salespeople, time is money, and they don't like to waste their time. So one of the things I did a long time ago at D4 is we created an SLA, a service level agreement, that both sales and marketing department had to sign. So we agreed of what a qualified lead is, how long they had to take to follow up on it, what they had to do in Salesforce, and it really worked, and it really helped move the leads along to conversion.
Let's talk about that, the difference between MQLs and SQLs, because I've had clients ask me about that too, and they think brand awareness is supposed to be generating the gated leads that are going to buy from them. Okay, so there's a disconnect there. There's definitely a gap between the two. So Martha, start in, and then Cheryl, jump in. What are MQLs and SQLs? What's the difference?
Yeah, sure. So MQL is a marketing qualified lead that the marketing team has designated as most likely to become a customer compared to the other leads that you have. So this is typically determined by if you're lucky enough to have a marketing automation that does lead scoring, so it could be done by their lead score, or, you know, the CTAs that they click on, the pages that they visit, specifically a pricing page. Have they visited a pricing page? The content they've downloaded, interactions with social posts and other actions. So, it's really, then the sales qualified lead, sorry. I'm going to have to edit this out. I got to turn off my, sorry about that. Sales qualified lead is a prospective customer that's ready to talk to the sales team. So, and it really does depend on the marketing department has to help and determine that if they are ready to talk to the sales team, if they are an ideal customer profile, do they have the budget? Are they ready to talk about the purchasing decisions and the cycle? So, they've expressed enough interest in your product or service that they're ready to be moved to the salesperson. And you know, it's vital not to operate these in two silos. You know, in a cohesive marketing strategy, your demand generation tactics would feed into your lead generation goals. So for instance, an educational webinar, which is demand generation, could also then include a call to action for a free trial of your software.
I like to do surveys at the end of webinars or CLEs like that. We used to do them with the round table, and then I do them for clients, and I'm with the Miami-Dade Bar Association. We're doing them there too. And then have the attendees fill out a survey, and don't make it invasive, like five or six questions. How's the program? You know, what other topics would you like to hear? And then there's a question or two in there about, you know, what basically is a buyer persona question, which role are you? And then another one, do you want additional information on, and you give them a specific list. And that's a way to bridge that MQL to an SQL. Cheryl?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I love that. It's kind of getting them to raise their hand, right? They're opting in at that point, which is like the cleanest way to get a nice clean lead, right? I think too, the other thing I like to think about as I'm thinking about leads or, you know, demand or lead generation and thinking about the hustle too, Rogo, that you were talking about, is I always think back to the Blues Traveler song, The Hook, right? The hook brings you back. And so going back to running around and meeting people, you know, whether you're sending emails, whether you're doing events, what's the hook that hits that customer persona, that target persona that you're going after? It's not the same for every single person that you're going after. So that's something really important. It might be different if you're talking to a big law firm or a small law firm, a chief innovation officer, someone further down, you know, maybe someone in IT has a different perspective. So it's really important to have that hook be the right hook for the ear of the person that you're listening to.
Agreed.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think that this could probably be a whole separate webinar, but making sure that you create buyer personas and, you know, each buyer persona has a different hook, right? You know, a small law firm versus, you know, in-house counsel. So that's also really key. I totally agree.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to jump into the analytics reporting, which is the beautiful wrapping and the bow and all this, it pulls it all together. So we have brand awareness. Do people know who you are? Have they learned to trust you? Have you built that reputation? And then demand generation, now that they trust you, are you giving them really good content, thought leadership? Are you drawing them back into that cycle with you? Because, you know, brand awareness is a one-way street. Demand generation brings them back into you. And then lead generation is where they're actually willing to start talking to you about opportunities to work together. And we have this transition during that between a marketing qualified lead and a sales qualified lead. And so, and one of you brought up scoring, marketing automation. I think Martha, it was you. And I'm a huge fan of scoring. And this is so critical for analytics reporting. So it's the best way to determine how all three of these are supporting revenue growth. So what are some initial analytical signals? Let me punt to Cheryl first. And Martha, I'm going to have you dig in. What are some initial analytical signals that a business should be monitoring, Cheryl?
Yeah, so I mean, you want to hook analytics up to really anything that you're doing that's public facing, right? So think about your website. It can be as simple as Google Analytics that's free. That's a good starting point, right? HubSpot has great tools in it, whatever your CRM is, right? Hook that up as well. Your social media, you know, LinkedIn, maybe you have a premium account, make sure you have a company page and you're watching those types of things. But any of your social platforms, especially if you convert to a business account, you know, with Meta, Instagram, all those types of things, you're going to be able to see how active your posts are, how many impressions you're getting on it, who's looking at it, what types of people are searching for you. And those things tell you whether or not, one, your message is landing, right? Are people coming to you? Are the right people coming to you for the right thing? And two, they also help drive your decisions downstream, right? Are the things that you think are going to work working? And are the things that you've decided you're not going to focus on the correct things to not focus on?
You know, and you you brought up different channels and then you just ended it with what's working, what's not working. And that's really important to your ideal client persona. Where do they get their information? That's where you need to be. Don't bother feeling like you have to have something on every single social media channel that's available, because in B2C and B2B, they are not on the same channels.
Right.
And so only use the distribution channels where your clients exist. And that's where you're going to get your best analytics. So if you're running analytics on a channel where your clients don't exist, it's going to look bad and it's going to give you a false information or false idea that you might need to adjust your strategy when you really don't. You're just on the wrong channel. So that kind of leads me into the next question from Martha, like, how does this data inform and help adjust your marketing and sales strategies?
Sure. Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, you have to look at it definitely monthly, but I'm looking at things every week, especially as a startup and we're really starting to grow. Yeah, HubSpot or Salesforce, whatever you're using is kind of key to that, as well as like Cheryl said, Google Analytics. And as we all know, LinkedIn is like the number one social media platform for our industry. So constantly looking at at the statistics and the analytics that we get from LinkedIn. But, you know, it's, if you're looking at it weekly, it allows you to pivot very quickly. If things aren't working, you can pivot quickly and make a change. You know, if your LinkedIn ad that you, you know, just launched is not getting, not getting downloads or not getting clicks, then you can turn that off really quickly and reevaluate and start over. So, you know, and there's also the analytics around the things that you're doing. So email marketing campaigns and things like that. How are you, how's your newsletter? Are people opening it? Are they clicking? You know, it's really exciting. You know, 20 years ago, we didn't have any of this. So you kind of had to guess. But you know, we get so much information now out of all the solutions that we're using and every kind of technology that we're using that you should be able to easily know what's working, what's not, and then pivot if you have to.
Cheryl, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think another tool or kind of analytics tool that I really like, there's a bunch of them, but heat mapping tools. One's called Hotjar, where you can see on your website, where are people going, and you can, or your app, and you can see when people get frustrated. You ever anger click because something's not working, and you can see when people do that. And it's really great even for the product team and for the sales and marketing as well. So those are something worth looking at. But I think the key thing is, as you look at metrics, sometimes you see things that you just totally did not expect. I had a post a couple, maybe a month ago, that ended up getting hundreds of thousands of hits that was on artificial intelligence. And I'm telling you, if it was three sentences, it was somebody else's article I wrote three sentences on, it went nuts. And so I've been doing analytics and tests ever since to figure out, why was that so interesting to people? I have no idea. Because I want to know, how do I make more of those, right? Like, how do I make that, recreate that? And so as a company, you'll see things that are you expect, like, okay, cool, that was a good message and that went the way I wanted it. But you'll see stuff you don't expect too. And sometimes it's, you don't expect it to the positive, right? And then you can take advantage of that stuff.
Yeah, some of the way that I use analytics to advise clients is, like, after you've got, I think you really need about 3 months worth of putting a minimum. You really need more, but you need a minimum of 3 months to be able to show somebody something. And like for, you know, like email campaigns for the sales team, first of all, making sure that the whole tech stack is integrated. Like we're talking about the different tools, like make sure your website is integrated with your CRM, your email campaigns is integrated. Everything needs to be feeding into the CRM. One of the big things I look for is subscriber scoring through the email campaigns, because some opens and clicks are important. You know, and you want to see, you know, like what subject lines you're taking off, what kind of copy, what kind of content you're putting in, and test out the different kinds of content. Those opens and clicks will give you a good idea of what kind of subject lines and pre-header lines and the content that's really resonating more than others. That's a marketing analytics. Now, the sales side of it for me, because I'm more of a sales personality, is that subscriber score, because at some point, the opens and clicks are not nearly as important to me as a salesperson as that subscriber score is, because I can go into my leads database and I can, you know, if I've got them organized between leads and contacts, you've identified them correctly, you've got cold, warm, and hot leads, then I can also order them according to subscriber score. And those that are higher have a higher score on the list. For me as a salesperson, I'm looking at that, because when I can see who's got a higher score, I know what the relationship is. Maybe it's already a client, or maybe it's a friend of the business or whatever, but it's not going to take me long to find a pretty high score of a lead that is somebody I need to follow up on. But on top of that, I can dig into their record. If it's set up in the CRM correctly, I can pull up their record and I can see all the campaigns they've received, what they've opened, what they've clicked in. And I can start putting a story together along with something else we were talking about between qualifying leads, between MQLs and SQLs. I wanted to mention, if you write a strategic account plan, again, this is the bridge between marketing and sales. Marketing can qualify it, but the way the sales goes and qualified, if you write out a strategic account plan, and it takes work, it takes time. Salespeople don't want to do that. We just want to sell and make money. I get it. But if you put the work into these scoring systems, using your operations, your analytics, prepare a strategic account plan, it gives you the information that when you reach out, it doesn't have to be a cold outreach. I have used that so many times and reached out to someone and said, hey, I'm interested in speaking with you. I see that you've, you know, really interested in these two or three things. And based on my research, it looks like these three items might be a source of pain for you. Every single time I have put that kind of effort into it and put that email together that summarizes what I believe they're interested in and the research I've done through the SAP that identified a few pain points, I don't have to give them all the pain points, just two or three, because they always come back and say, oh my God, you're exactly right. That's 100%. Yes, I need to have a conversation with you. At 100% rate, when I put that kind of effort into it, I got a meeting.
Right.
That's an SQL. It takes work, but it's worth it. And it's different than throwing a bunch of spaghetti on the wall and calling them leads. Like that is a bigger waste of time to me than putting the time and effort instead of throwing 100 on the wall, choosing 5 because of all of these analytics reports that I have access to. And if I put that story together the right way and reach out, I'd rather have 5 that say yes to a meeting than having to work through 100 that I'm just throwing the stuff on the wall.
Right. Quality, not quantity.
Exactly.
So ladies, this has been an exciting conversation. I've really enjoyed just, you know, being friends with you, being colleagues with you, watching each of our careers grow and supporting another. So let's do a little bit of a recap. So for our audience, we've really addressed your marketing basics in order. Brand awareness is first. You've got to have brand awareness. And then that leads you into the next step with demand generation. And then lead generation, lead conversion, which is the bridge between marketing and sales, qualified leads, and then those analytics reports and how that really helps the handoff between marketing and sales. So with that, Cheryl, let me throw it to you. And how would you like to summarize this? And what thoughts would you like to leave our audience with today?
Yeah, well, thank you again, Rogo, for having me, Melissa. Thank you again for having me. I think brand awareness always is the thing that I'm going to push for everybody. Go out there, be seen, be heard, show everybody your authentic self.
Excellent. Martha?
Yes, again, thanks, Rogo, for this. And Cheryl, it was great to connect with you as well. Brand awareness is the start. And then lead and demand generation is, you know, where you're going to start generating that potential revenue for the sales team and then passing it off to the sales team. So, and again, I can't emphasize enough how important sales and marketing alignment is. I know we all believe in that. We want to make sure that everybody else does too.
Yeah. Make sure each team is communicating, your stakeholder talking to each other so that you are targeting the right client, you're creating the right messaging, so that all of these steps together that push that messaging out lead to the right people, and the right, most efficient handoff to the sales team for revenue generation. So, all right. That will wrap up our interview with Cheryl Wilson-Griffin and Martha McPherson. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me today and collaborating with me on the article in this video. This was a lot of fun, and I hope everybody has a great rest of your day.